Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on education when we come back. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance. Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft, and someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. Swinton outraged his colleagues by replying that there's no such thing at this date of the world's history in America as an independent press. He said, "You know it and I know it. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things. And any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for a new job. If I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours my occupation would be gone. The business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. Now you know it and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are the tools and vassals, he said, of rich men behind the scenes. And we're the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Now, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program, this New World Order, the men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers and Bushes and Bundys and Carnegies and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that it's time we wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and this New World Order, call and order my free 4-hour compact disc package. It's a educational, entertaining, informative program. Best of all, it's free. And you can call right now to order one. The number's 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, and the subject matter of education, big, broad topic. But American education's broke. It's been broke for probably 50 or 75 years. They took it over. What's happened here is we have replaced our traditional educational system, a system of teaching people how to think. And we've replaced it with a system that teaches people how to work for corporations. So the educational process isn't designed to train people to think and to be self-responsible or responsible for themselves, but rather to go out and earn a living. And so you go to college, you didn't go to college to learn how to think and how to be a better person, or how to be, how to find out for yourself how the world works and why it works that way, and to think for yourself and make independent decisions. You've been taught to follow the manual. You've been taught how to get along, to go along, or go along to get along. Let me give you an illustration. You take a teacher in the public school system, and he's teaching evolution. He comes up against a snag. You know, somebody like me comes along and says, you know, there was this story, for instance, that deals with the sun. Let me give you the story here, since we're using evolution. And there's a story about the sun is shrinking. And then a Newswire report, and this was reported in the USA Today, I believe it was. And it's the sun's diameter appears to have been decreasing by about 0.1% per century, and scientists have been watching for over 100 years, and the evidence is now conclusive. Every hour, the sun is shrinking by about 5 feet. So if the sun is shrinking 0.1% per century, then it totals 1% per 1,000 years or millennium, and if the sun existed just 100,000 years ago, it would have been double its present diameter. And then only 20 million years ago, the surface of the sun would be touching the Earth. And as far as researchers can tell, this rate of shrinkage has been consistent since the origin of the sun. Now, suppose you're a science teacher in high school, and you're listening to this program, and I read you that statement. You know, that's a statement that you read every Sunday in your Sunday supplement in your newspaper. There'll be a story in there about astrophysics or something, you know. Now, you know, science teachers in America don't think. They're taught to believe what the book says. So when you read something in a book, you don't sit there and say, what makes us believe that's true? A little different in law school. Now, people that go to law school are taught to think. Well, at least some of them are, because they have to be logical in order to put on a case in court. You have to be able to cross-examine and examine. But science teachers aren't taught to think. They're taught to believe. And they believe what's in the science textbook. Now, in the science textbook, it tells us that about 65 million years ago, a comet came in from outer space, hit the Yucatan Peninsula, and the dinosaurs were all extinct. That's what caused the extinction of the dinosaur. That's the latest theory. There wasn't anybody here 65 million years ago to document that, write it down. It's just pure fantasy. It's just pure, hypothesis. Let's just assume that it's true. I mean, that's what science teachers are taught to believe. That's what they teach their students. So he says to his students one day, he says, well, the dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago because a comet hit the Yucatan Peninsula and caused all these climatic changes and blah, blah, blah. But fortunately, the mammals were able to survive and thrive. Okay. Now, we believe that. Now, along comes another group of scientists over here, and they don't know anything about dinosaurs. I mean, they're not geologists. They're not paleontologists. They're astrophysicists. And so they get another grant from government, and they get a telescope out here, and they start looking at the sun. And they take a look at the sun, and they take measurements, and they do all of their work over there, and they come to a conclusion. They say, well, the sun is being consumed at about 5 feet an hour. Well, the sun is about 750,000 miles in diameter. And, I can't do it with my 1197 G3 Texas instrument here, but, there are computers out there that can do the work. And it doesn't take you very long, to figure out at 5 feet an hour, 5 times 24 hours in a day. Just do that 24 times 5. The sun's being consumed by 120 feet a day. Now, tomorrow it'll be 240 feet, and the next day, it'll be 360 feet and so on. And, pretty soon that adds up. And if we were to add that up, and we just go through the numbers over here, you'd find that in 20 million years, just going backwards, adding 5 feet, in 20 million years, the sun would be 93 million miles in diameter. Now, it just so happens that the Earth is 93 million miles from the sun. So 20 million years ago, using the same theory of uniformitarianism that we're taught in school, that means then that only one-third of the time back to the dinosaurs, that's 20 million years ago, the sun was 93 million miles in diameter, which is the orbit of the Earth, which means the Earth was burned up long ago. Are you starting to... Does that register with any of you people out there? This is another one of those pseudo-scientific lies, what it boils down to. It's either the dinosaurs didn't die out 65 million years ago, or the sun isn't being consumed at the rate of 5 feet an hour, or uniformitarianism has changed at some time in the past, and it hasn't always been constant, so therefore uniformitarianism is a fantasy. I don't know which one of the three is true, but you can't have all three because it's illogical. Now, science teachers have a job to do, and you tell a science teacher that what he's teaching over here is pure fantasy, lies, half-truths, some truth, and most of us just BS, he's not going to go into school and say, look, boys and girls, let me tell you the truth. We just don't know. No, he's not going to do that. He'd lose his job if he did that. He can't come into the public school and say, gee, maybe special creation's got some merit after all, because the evolutionary hypothesis won't stand up to mathematical, won't stand up to the math. The analysis that we do mathematically doesn't come out. The numbers don't come out. No, he's not going to do that. He goes to college to learn how to make a living. When he gets out into the business world, in this case teaching, he is going to teach just exactly what the book says, and he's going to follow his instructions. Now, it just so happens that about 54% of scientists that are in the workplace believe in evolution, and about 46% of scientists in the workplace believe in creation or God. It's almost 50-50. And if the truth were known of the 54% who believe in evolution, if the guy actually told you the truth, it would probably be down near zero. But those 54% work for government institutions where the official party line is evolutionary philosophy. And if this guy wants to get promoted, if this guy wants to go anywhere in life, he's got to have, the approval of his superiors. And that's the way that game is played. Now, honesty is not a part and parcel with academics. It isn't today, and it probably never has been, because when the religious people were in control of the educational system, they taught you that the world was flat and that the sun revolved around the earth. That was patently false, and they said they got it out of the Bible, or you assumed that you got it out of the Bible. The Bible says that the world is round, not flat. Now, it depends upon which political ideology is in control of the educational system, and this is why God in the Bible told you to educate your child at home. And here in America, when we practiced that philosophy, when we all educated our own children, we had a great diversity of false beliefs. But the great diversity of false beliefs were isolated into little small groups. Today, we have one great big homogeneous false belief called evolution, which governs the entire political, economic, and military facilities of the governments of the world. It permeates our colleges. It permeates everything that we think, everything that we do. Now, In this book, last time we were talking about America to pray or not to pray, and David Barton puts a date right on the time frame that American education started downhill. It was 1962. And as a result of that, he says, here talking about America to pray or not to pray, our teachers, America's education, he says, in transnational studies, where Japan and Russia and England and France and other countries around the world put students together into a test, America comes out near last every time. We're never first, and we're near last almost all the time. Our educational system in the United States is the laughing stock of the educational world around the world. Everybody around the world laughs at us because of our ignorance, which comes from evolutionary philosophy. That's the beginning point of it. And you're never going to change it. I mean, I'm not here to tell you, you know, that we need to vote this guy in or vote that guy out, or that we're going to change the educational system. The public education system is a rotten system to start with. It's a German system that they came up with because they got defeated by the French, and they wanted to change that. So they came up with a program. We've adopted that losing strategy or that losing program. The thing to do is to abandon it. But you can't get Americans to abandon the educational system. That's the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. You people believe in public education, you know, like you believe that dinosaurs ruled the world 65 million years ago. And you're not about to give that up. Now, there's three or four of you out there that may be ticked off about the educational system. The solution for you three or four, that little fringe minority, jerk your kid out of public school, educate yourself. If you're dissatisfied with the way the system is working, then why don't you change it? And the way to change it is to change it for yourself. I'm not going to change it for you. I'm not going to educate your kid. I don't care if your kid's as dumb as a box of rocks. It's irrelevant to me. If you want your kid to know something, then teach him something. He's not going to learn it in public school. He's sure as hell not going to learn it from a science teacher over there that's concerned, or more concerned about his paycheck next Friday than he is about whether he's telling the truth to his students. Now, while other nations have remained the same or even improved academically, America's educational system has been on a downward spiral and holds neither a superior status nor a good reputation in the eyes of the international community. And perhaps the lack of respect toward the American educational system is best illustrated by the results of a two-year cooperative study conducted between Japan and the United States in 1985 and 86. Teams of scholars from each nation made extensive visits to the other's schools to identify ingredients which would be helpful for their own educational system. In January of 1987, the Department of Education released the results of their two-year study in a report titled Japanese Education Today, with an epilogue titled Implications for American Education. These reports specifically identified numerous aspects of the Japanese system that the experts felt should be incorporated into the American system. Japanese officials released their six-page report at the same time, but with significantly differing conclusions. After 2 years of study, the Japanese found no specific aspect of American education that they considered worth emulating, as reported in the January 8, 1987 New York Times. And the article said, "It is not our intention that contents of the current American educational system be proposed as elements of educational reform in Japan. Recently, the outcome of common math tests show Japanese children scoring higher than Americans," said Mr. Amagi, who led the study for the Ministry of Education. "American scholars," Mr. Amagi went on, "seem to share the view that the American educational system has fallen into mediocrity. American children register very poor scores on international tests." Quoting from recent studies by American educators, the Japanese researchers cited the worries in the United States about teacher skills, dropout rates, poor student performance, and lowered college standards. "It is a potent commentary on the current state of American education when, after 2 years of extensive study, the Japanese researchers could find no specific aspect of American education considered worth emulating in Japan." So the Japanese came over and said, "What are you trying to do, sell us this can of worms? There isn't anything that you Americans are doing over here that we'd want to do, unless we wanted to dumb our children down." Now, here in America, the least common denominator is simply this. The people who are in control of our educational system are not ignorant people. These people aren't dumb. These people have deliberately taken over the educational system and screwed it up so that your children are going to be subservient to the corporate masters. That's the bottom line. And they are. Americans, when they go to college, they're not going to college to learn. They're going to college to find a wife or a husband, have a good time, get a degree so that they can get a good job. Knowledge, truth, wisdom, understanding don't have any part in American education. It isn't even on the horizon. So if you have it in your mind that you'd like your child to grow up wise, knowledgeable, intelligent, able to understand and grasp the significance of the world around him, well, you're going to have to educate him at home. You're going to have to do something different than educating him in public school. The public school system here in America educates to the standards of the poorest students in the class, not to the highest students. Now, it's been that way for a long time, and it's not very likely to change. It's politically motivated, and you know there's good people out there, you know, that have handicapped children. They want their children to be educated in the public school system to the same standards as everybody else, which only slows everybody else down. I remember we had a kid in our class, his name was Danny Cloney, and he was handicapped. And he had cerebral palsy. And he came to public school. He was in the ag class. He actually came to the ag class, and he sat there. And he didn't slow anybody else down. But then we weren't teaching to the least common denominator, which is Danny Cloney. That wasn't the objective. And he didn't go to the rest of the classes because this kid could hardly walk. He could hardly walk. Today, that kid would have to be assimilated into the curriculum of the public school. After you give him a 12-year education, he's going to do anything with it anyway, because he's physically incapacitated. He can never take over as the head of a business or to operate. He can't drive a cab. He couldn't take over the OCAB company in Eureka, California. What he ultimately ended up doing, they built him a newspaper stand there on F Street, I believe it was, around Henderson and F. And Danny Cloney's newsstand was there. Now, he could handle that, and he made his living there. He lived with his mother until he finally died. He didn't live too long. He lived until he was about 30. But the moral of the story is that today, the education system has been politicized. And so they're teaching to the least common denominator. Japanese come over here, they take a look at that and say, we don't want to buy that in Japan. But evidently, Americans want to buy that. And so American students, now you're wondering what's happened to the educational system here. American students are being taught now to the least common denominator, to the Danny Cloney level. Danny Cloney, nice kid. Too bad he had cerebral palsy. I didn't create it. I didn't cause it. I'm not running him down. I'm just saying that's the way life is. You got to take your best and brightest students, and you've got to educate them to a level that runs them up to an IQ of 160. Those people with 160 IQ, I remember when I was in the third grade, Mrs. Wiles, our teacher, she was an old lady. She was in her 60s. You know, when you're 8 years old, you know, and you're looking at this old gray-haired lady, you know, walking around on platform shoes, you go, oh, my God, how did I end up in a class like this? One of the best educational experiences of my life, third grade. Because Mrs. Wiles took about three or four or five students out of the class, and she put them up in the front on her right side. And then all the rest of us sat around the room. Then she had another group of about five or six students. They were the dumbest kids in the class. She put those on her left side. And they were over on the other side of the room, front. All the rest of us are sitting around the room. The smartest kids in the class, she went over and she started them on their work. And then they were way ahead of me. The rest of us were ordinary kids. Not just an ordinary, run-of-the-mill, everyday, garden variety kid in school. And, you know, an IQ around 85, 90. And nothing to brag about. So I'm not the dumbest kid. I'm not 45 or 50, but I'm not the sharpest marble in the drawer. And so she starts these kids off, and she accelerated them. She had those kids working on up to, in some cases, fifth grade work. I mean, she had fifth grade. Here, we're in the third grade. She's got kids working in fifth grade readers, fifth grade spelling books, fifth grade history books. That's those five or six over here. The dumbest kids over here, she spends more time with those five or six dummies over there because they need more help. The rest of us in here, we're just mediocre, average Joe six packs, and we can kind of muddle along. So she'd work with us. And so she had these three classes in her class. And by the way, she had 32 children in her class. 32 in her class. And today they're talking about, you know, if you got 32 in your class, you know, you're a teacher that's burdened. That woman wasn't burdened. She took every kid in that class, all 32 of that class were promoted to the fourth grade. Not one kid was held back. And that included the dumb ones and the ordinaries and the smartest. Now, that was public school back in 1947 or 46, along in there. We don't do that today. And it shows. Now, American education also impacts upon business. Listen to this. The academic decline in America's public schools has posed a threat to the business community. American business has restructured many programs in order to accommodate weaker students. The reason for that restructuring is obvious. In 1987, the New York Telephone Company gave its simple 50-minute exam in basic reading and reasoning skills to 21,000 applicants for entry-level jobs. Only 16% passed. But get this. You got 21,000 applicants for jobs with the New York Telephone Company. All of them, presumably, have graduated from high school. Even if they didn't graduate from high school, we would presume that they went to the 10th grade, 16 years old, must have been at least sophomores, completed their sophomore year of high school. And yet only 16% of them could pass the test at the telephone company for an entry-level job. We're not talking about, you know, the CEO of the company. We're not talking about research and development. We're just entry-level. Well, what happened to the other 84%? They flunked. So, a Department of Education study found that one in three young adults with a degree from a two- or four-year college could not correctly answer this question. Listen to the question now. If you spend $1.95 for a sandwich and 60 cents for a bowl of soup, and you give the cashier $3, how much change should you receive? Can you do that? Just write it down. It's $1.95. That's what you bought. You know, you bought a sandwich here. And then 60 cents for a bowl of soup. So, $1.95 and 60. If you add it up, how much do you get? And you give the waitress $3, how much change do you get? Well, the answer is 45 cents. But one-third of the college graduates missed. One-third of college graduates missed. You know, today when you go into a store, they've got cash registers that make change. And the cash register, when you punch in the numbers over here, you know, like $14.95, and then you give her a $20 bill, She punches in $20, and then it tells her how much change to give back. They don't have to calculate the change. I would submit to you that if people had to actually make change, this is a third of college graduates. A University of Texas, get this, here's a University of Texas study revealed that 15,000 people tested, 40% could not figure correct change from a store purchase. This is the University of Texas study, revealed that 15,000 people tested. They went out and tested 15,000 Joe Six Packs, just everybody out on the street. 40% couldn't figure the correct change, 40%. That's 4 people out of every 10 cannot figure their change. Well, now that's preposterous on its face. I can remember in the third grade we learned how to do change. So these two problems right here were done when I was in public school, and I was handicapped by public school. And I learned that with Mrs. Wilds in the third grade, and that was standard curricula. That wasn't for the smart kids, you know, that were studying up in advance. Here. In 1987, a number of banks in the New York City Public School District agreed to place some 400 students into entry-level positions. The bank's criterion for employment was nothing more than simple, standard job entry skills, but they were able to qualify only 100 students, 25%. The others did not even have the basic reading and writing skills required for employment. Couldn't even read and write. New York public schools. Now, listen, that's not an accident. That is designed that way. The educational system that you have in America today is deliberately structured to turn out students like that so that they can no longer think for themselves and they can be melded and molded to fit into the new world order. So if you want your kid to be able to think, you know, you're going to have to do something better than this. This is just nonsense. Now, if you're one of these people, let's suppose you're listening to me right now, and you're one of these people who went to the New York City schools, and you're one of the 400, and out of the 400, you end up being one of the 300 that can't qualify for a basic entry-level skill job with a bank. How can you teach your children? See, your problem is not only are you ignorant, you can't even teach your children because you're so ignorant, you can't even get an entry-level job. So it's the blind leading the blind is what it boils down to. And it doesn't take very long, you know, a couple of generations of that, and you've got the whole society in your hand. And that's where America is today. A lot of times people say, well, the American people, when they finally wake up to what's being done to them, they will rise up in righteous indignation. No, they won't. They'll sit down, shut up, and fold their hands and do what they're told because they haven't got a brain that's big enough to figure out what the hell to do next. Reminds me when I was a kid, when I was 11 years old, and I'd had it with my dad. You know, he was a jerk if there ever was one. I think every kid, when he gets to be about 11 or 12 years old, finally wakes up to the fact that his old man must be a jerk. So I announced to my dad, I'm going to run away from home. I'm leaving here. I'm splitting and leaving the scene. So my dad, I expected him to repent in sackcloth and ashes for having dealt so harshly with me, but he didn't. He said to me, he said, well, don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out. Let me help you pack. And so he said, have you got a suitcase? And you know, I'm 11 years old. How many 11-year-old kids have a suitcase? So I didn't have a suitcase, and he said, okay, well, let me give you one of mine. And he went and he got one of these big old box suitcases. We went out to the garage is where it was. Big old metal suitcase from about World War I with a leather handle on it, you know, and the big brass straps on there, blue metal, you know, old-timey thing. Brought that thing in there. Well, that thing was almost big enough for me to get into. And then he said, now, what do you want to take? And I said, well, I'm 11 years old. I'm no dummy. I want my electric train, Tonka Toys, Erector Set. And he looked at me like I was suffering from the terminal stupids. He said, why, where you're going, out on the sidewalk, there's no electricity. What are you going to do with an electric train and Erector Set out there on the sidewalk? He said, wouldn't you be better advised to take maybe a coat, some underwear, T-shirts, pants, shoes? And I thought about that for a second. I said, well, yeah that's probably right. So I'm 11 years old, so my dad goes over to my dresser and opens up the top drawer. How many underwear does a kid 11 years old have? I got 3 or 4. How many T-shirts? 3 or 4. How many pants? 2. How many shoes? I'm wearing 1. I got one other one. How many coats? 1. He threw it all in the suitcase. It didn't even fill up one end. And he said, what else do you want? I thought for a minute. I said, well, I guess that'll probably be enough. He says, how much money you got? And I said, $20. Now, 1950, that's a lot of money, $20. I was delivering newspapers, you know, and I was making $47 a month, and I had $20 cash in my pocket. And $20, you know, would have been worth, you know, maybe $200 today, you know. I mean, you know, it was a chunk of money, $20. And he said, well, that's not near enough. So he reached in his pocket. He whips out another $20 bill. He puts it there on the top of the suitcase. He says, now you got $40. He says, now where do you want me to take it? Where do you want to go? Having not thought this thing through very well, I didn't know. And he said, well, let me suggest the Vance Hotel. It's the cheapest hotel in town. It's $5 a night. With $40, you've got enough money there to pay a week's rent. You have 7 days rent and $5 left over. With $5, you can have ham and eggs once a day in the restaurant. Ham and eggs in those days was $1. No sales tax, 1950, no sales tax. And then it dawned on me, you know, as dumb as I was, you know, I finally figured out, I said, wait a minute, $40 is only enough for 1 week's rent? I make $47 a month delivering newspapers. And I could figure out right away that, you know, I didn't have enough money to pay rent for 30 days at the Vance Hotel. I didn't have any place else to go. And so it just kind of dawned on me. I said, you know, I don't have enough money to escape this tyranny that I find myself in. And so I said to my dad, I said, well, maybe I won't run away just yet. And he said, you know, that's the wisest thing that I've heard come out of your mouth in this whole conversation. Wisest thing I've heard come out of your mouth. And so he said, now let me explain it to you. He said, see, I'm old dad, and this is the kingdom of Gordon. And you live here, and you're a subject. Your mother's the queen, and I'm the king. I make the laws. Your mother executes them, and you sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and do what you're told. And if you don't, it's going to hurt real bad. Well, I already knew that. So, I mean, I've been living there for all my life, so I already knew it hurt real bad, you know, when you got up there with the old man. And so he pointed out to me that until I was emancipated, you know, until I got to be a big kid and could feed and clothe and house and support myself, that he was going to go out and do all that for me. But he said there were certain things that he expected me to do, you know, like make your bed, pick up your dirty clothes and throw them in the clothes hamper, mow the grass, feed the dog, take out the garbage. You know, there's just a few things around the house that he figured that, you know, 11-year-old kid ought to be able to do. And he said, I'm going to insist on that. And if you don't do it, he said, you know, it's going to hurt real bad. And so, and then when you get ready to emancipate yourself, you can just go and do whatever the hell you want. But while you're living here at home, you're going to do what you're told. Bottom line. All right, so there was my education, and there was my introduction to reality in the real world at age 11. I don't think most Americans, and especially those that go to college, have ever come to that realization yet. Hang on, I got to give you a reminder here. And that is that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package to order yours. Just call the law school at 417-273-4967. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors and publications that we endorse and recommend will necessarily reciprocate, and that's because most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint is not necessarily totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers or the sponsors or the management or the staff of this network or local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website is georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about education. Education's broke. It's been broke for a long time. And there's this constant badgering, you know, that the president comes out and says, with a new program. You know, Clinton came out with a new program. It was OBE. And then Bush comes along. He's got a new program. It's called No Child Left Behind. And what they're trying to do is to fix this broken system. Well, the system can't be broke. I showed you that in the first program. Hell, you can't even fire an incompetent teacher in New York. You got to go through, I think it was 99 steps or 87 steps to fire an incompetent teacher. Can you imagine running a business where you needed to fire somebody because he was incompetent and you couldn't get rid of him? So what they do is they promote these fools to a higher level to get them out of the way. You know, just keep paying them. And one-third of all of the expenses, now we spend about $500 billion a year, it's $500 billion a year, $500 billion a year on public education. One-third of that times 0.33, one-third of that, $165 billion of it goes to administration. And they never have enough money. They've always got to have more money. And the solution, the mantra that you hear from politicians is we need more money. Well, there's two. More money and smaller class sizes. More money and smaller class sizes. Excuse me. You go down to the local Catholic school, and they've got big classes, and the teachers make half as much money, and the children score at the 80th percentile. So the children perform better. They don't shoot their fellow classmates. They pray and read the Bible. They've got religious mores and mores. Whether you agree with their religious philosophies or not, at least they're not shooting each other in the Catholic school. And the nuns maintain control over the children. Okay, and that's the way that game is played. I wouldn't send my kid to a Catholic school, but then that's neither here nor there. Now, there's another school system out here called the homeschool system. There's about 2 million children in that homeschool system now in America. So, you know, speaking about 2007. Now, this particular book I'm reading from here, it comes from the 1980s.
called America to Pray or Not to Pray. He's got an upgraded or an updated book. I got about 1996. I think he updated it. Do you think that the public school system is better today than it was in 1985? That's 20 years ago. No, it's degenerated from 1985. This is how bad it was 20 years ago. It's worse today. I haven't got the latest details on how bad it is today, but from that period to this period, we've had several more school shootings, like Columbine. So everybody can point to with great pride. We got 120 kids a year being shot in the Detroit public schools. That was back in the 80s. I imagine they're shooting just as many today as they were then. Now, corporate training is getting bigger than our entire elementary, secondary, and higher education systems put together. Did you know that? Yeah. Since business can no longer assume that their employees have received sufficient training in fundamental academic skills, many corporations are setting aside significant portions of their annual budget for remedial education for their employees. In an article in the Los Angeles Times, David T. Kearns, chief executive officer of Xerox Corporation, said that American business will have to hire more than 1 million new service and production workers a year who cannot read, write, or count. Teaching them how and absorbing the lost productivity while they are learning will cost industry $25 billion a year, and nobody seems to know how much or how long remedial training will be necessary. 3 out of 4 major corporations already are giving new workers basic reading, writing, and arithmetic courses. Corporate training is bigger than our entire elementary, secondary, and higher education systems put together. It's a terrible admission, but $25 billion a year for remedial training has become a necessary added cost of doing business. That's a special report of the December 11th to 21st, 1983 Dallas Times Herald. Hey, I like that. So, bottom line is, corporate America has to educate children outside of the school system in their own school system. Now, wait a minute. Let's hang on here for a second. Think about this. You're going to the public school, and you evidently can't learn how to read, write, and count for whatever reason. Well, if you can't learn how to read, write, and count when you're 11, 12, 15 years old, why can you learn how to read, write, and count when you're 20 or 25 years old? Or if we put the shoe on the other foot, if you can learn how to read, write, and count when you're 25 years old working for IBM or Xerox, then how come you couldn't learn how to read, write, and count when you're 10, 11, 12, 15 years old? Is it because it's designed that way to make you dependent upon the major corporations? And is it designed that way so that you can't think for yourself? And that's precisely what it is. And I showed you that the other day. Let me read it to you one more time. The process, the program that we're going through, it was taken from the Germans. In 1819 in Prussia, the first compulsory schooling for children was instituted. According to educator John Taylor Gatto, society in Prussia was divided into children who will become policymakers, children who will become assistants to policymakers, and the children who will be the vast massed used. And what we're talking about here is the vast massed used. Prussia sets up a three-tier school system in which 0.5% of the population is taught to think. They go to schools called academia. 5.5% of the population go to the real schooling, where they actually partially learn to think, but not completely. And that's because Prussia believed their defeat at the hands of Napoleon was caused by people thinking for themselves at times of stress on the battlefield. Now we're going to see that scientifically this couldn't happen again. So the lowest 94% went to Volksschulen. It's what we do here in the United States. Same system right here. Now if you want your child in that bottom 94%, public school is the place to send them. If you want your child in that top 0.5%, you educate him in homeschool. If you want your kid to be able to partially think, you educate him in parochial school. Now, while working for the Chrysler Corporation, John C. Graves found in 1980 that the majority of new assembly line workers hired, most of them recent high school graduates, could read at only the sixth grade level and do only fourth grade math. Now, here's high school graduates. Remember, we talked about this a little earlier. These people have a high school diploma. They can only read at the sixth grade level. How many of them? Well, 1980, the majority of new assembly line workers, majority. Well, 50% is half, so the majority is 51%. So at least 51%, I don't know if it's 60, 70, or 80, I didn't say here, but at least 51% could only read at the 6th grade level. Why couldn't they read at the 12th grade level? When I was in the 9th grade, I could read at the 9th grade level. When I was in the 10th grade, I could read at the 10th grade level. When I was in the 12th grade, I could read at the 12th grade level. And so could all of the other students, and every student that graduated in our graduating class in 1957 could read and could write and could count. And you couldn't get a high school diploma unless you could. And that's the way it was in the 50s. Now, it has degenerated from that point on. Public school was bad when I went to public school. My dad told me it was bad. He said, I feel sorry for you. He said, you're not really getting educated here in this public school system. My granddad said that he could see the degeneration from the time when he went to school. I showed you here in, I think, the first program in the series. I said, hell, here's a test from 1895, for crying out loud. I couldn't pass that test. Hell, I'm pushing 70. I couldn't pass that test today. I don't think there's a college graduate in the United States. I shouldn't say a, but most college graduates in the United States today could pass that 1895 test. Most. And that's because if you're talking about college graduates over here, now remember, we just read this over here, Department of Education study that found that one in three young adults with a degree from a 2 or 4 year college couldn't correctly answer this question. If you spend $1.95 for a sandwich and 60 cents for a bowl of soup and give the cashier $3, how much change should you receive? If college graduates, kids, can't figure that out, they sure as hell ain't going to be able to pass that 1895 test. I'll tell you that. I can figure the change, and I can't pass the 1895 test. And where's that going to leave these people? Now remember, all these people vote. God, don't forget that one. All of these people that can't make change for lunch vote for president of the United States. And then you wonder why we've got a president like we have. And hell, our president, you know, he's graduated from college. You ever listen to that guy talk? You know, I'm a high school dropout, and I've got a better vocabulary, and I can speak better and use better grammar than the president of the United States. I can't keep up with my Aunt Bessie, you know, or my granny. And I went to the eighth grade, but, you know, I can do a little better than the president. Here's another one here. He blames the curriculum and promotion policies of the schools. He says these people should never have gotten out of school in the first place. That's exactly correct. You know, you should not get out of high school with a high school diploma if you can't read and write and do math at the 12th grade level. You know, if you can read, write, and do math at the 8th grade level, you should get a little degree that says, hey, this kid's, you know, educated to the 8th grade, like my granny. And then if he can get out of high school, he should be educated to the 12th grade. We don't do that. This is the deliberate dumbing down of America. That's what Charlotte Isherby wrote a book. It's called The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. You ought to get a copy of it. I think it's $54. A little pricey. Big, thick, 8.5 by 11 page book, about 600 pages long. She worked in the Department of Education in the Reagan administration. She said, this is deplorable. It's worse than deplorable. Let me write a book and tell you what's going on. Now, the people who are ignorant that we're discussing here, they're not going to buy Charlotte Isherby's book. Hell, they couldn't read it. They don't need it. They couldn't read it anyway. All they can do in the final analysis is to sit down, shut up, fold their hands, and do what they're told. Now, if you want to get beyond that, then you're going to have to educate yourself. Now, most people who go places in life, like Henry Ford, Thomas Edison, I'll show you here in the next programs here about homeschooling. These people are homeschooled. They're self-educated. Now, once you learn how to read, you know, you can educate yourself. Now, training and development manager at a Rockwell International plant that makes nuclear devices in Colorado, Graves finds that nearly all new assembly line employees need basic skills training before they can learn their jobs. Employees must read and compute at a 7th to 9th grade level to be trainable at this plant, Graves said. We're finding that a majority of people are not coming into the workplace with skills that high. They're coming into a nuclear plant. These are the people that are going to assemble atomic bombs. They've got to have a 7th to 9th grade level of education. They've got high school diplomas, and they can't perform at the 7th to 9th grade level. That's here in America. Can you understand why the Japanese can't find anything worth emulating in America? Now, let me tell you, it wasn't that way in the 50s. So, if we could learn in the 50s, does that mean that American children are stupid? Not at all. Your child isn't stupid. Your child is drugged up on Ritalin. Your child has been the victim of the public school system. That's why he's ignorant. And if you're suffering from this problem and you're age 52, that's your problem. You've been victimized by the public school system also. Why don't you get off your dead, and change that? If you can learn an education, if you can be educated in high school in 4 years, can't you educate yourself in the next 4 years? You're 52 years old, dumb as a box of rocks. Why don't you resolve to change that and go to work from age 52 to 56 and say, I think I'll smarten up a little bit. I think I'll educate myself. Hell, you could do that at age 32. I got a kid here working here now at the farm. He listened to a few broadcasts, and he said, I can't believe he's got a degree from college. And I got to tell you that this kid operates on about the 16. He's got the maturity of about a 16-year-old kid, 1950. Age 32. You know, his maturity level is about age 16. Now, he's been here for about 6 months. Came here in February. This is July. February, March, April, May, June, July. Yeah, about 6 months. And in 6 months, I think I have moved him up with personal tutoring and just working here on the farm. I'd say that his maturity is now about like 21. He's not a 32-year-old man, but he's 21 now in 6 months. And I give him a book about at least every week, but sometimes two books a week. He'll read one for 3 or 4 days. And then when he gets that one done, when we go on to the next book and the next book, he's probably read, I don't know, you know, 15, maybe 20 books in the 6 months that he's been here. And when he came here, he was a rabid socialist communist. Now we've gotten him back to where Americans used to be about 1950. You know, he's a socialist, but he's not a rabid communist. With a little more education, I think we might be able to convert this kid back into an American capitalist. And that'll take him back to about 1930, maybe 1920. And then if we want to go back a little further in our history and educate this kid up to a level or a standard of Americanism that we used to have in this country around the turn of the century, I think in the next 6 months I'll be able to accomplish that. I'll give you a report in 6 months and tell you how this kid turned out. This kid's not dumb. He is just sharp as a tack. I mean, he's a very bright, intelligent young man. He's just been dumbed down in the public school system. Hell, he went to college for crying out loud. He didn't learn anything in college. And I when he came here, I looked at this poor kid after I'd been here for about a week or two, and I'd listened to him for a little bit. I said, oh my God, I don't know what I can do with this guy. Well, surprisingly enough, you can learn. All of us can. So, you know, if you're sitting there and you say, oh my God, what am I going to do next? Well, get off your dead, you know what, and let's go to work and let's learn something. And the place to start, and I'd like to suggest, is that you get this book called America to Pray or Not to Pray, and let's take a look at the cause of the problem. The cause of the problem. I mean, you threw God and the Ten Commandments out of the public schools, and I just can't for the life of me see what's wrong with a law that says thou shalt do no murder. I mean, you're complaining about these kids coming into your public schools and shooting up the schools like Columbine and killing all these people over here. Did it ever occur to you to teach these people thou shalt not kill? That's a wild new concept. But, you know, well, that's what we learned when I was a kid in school. And let me tell you, of the 305 children who went to the Eureka public school system and graduated in 1957, not a single one of them ever went into a public school and shot it up and killed a bunch of other students and teachers. Not a one. So we were learning something different back in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s than we're teaching our children today. Something was different. And I want to tell you what it is. We hadn't kicked God the Ten Commandments in the Bible out of school yet. But when we got that job accomplished, things have been going downhill ever since. Now, this book, America to Pray or Not to Pray, is put out by a guy by the name of David Barton. David Barton. Don't tell David Barton that I sent you, because I'm not sure that David Barton approves of me. But just, you know, call him up, say, I heard this on the radio. And Wall Builder Press. That's what it's called, Wall Builder Press. Telephone number is 817-441-6044. And it's P.O. Box 397, Aledo, Texas, 76008. Now, let me give you that one more time. Wall Builder Press. P.O. Box 397, Aledo, Texas, 76008. Telephone number is 817-441-6044. This is called America to Pray or Not to Pray by David Barton. You might be able to pick up a copy of this in the local Christian bookstore, come think of it. All right, I'm running out of time. I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law, the law school, or the Law Hour, then please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. We are open to individuals, but by pre-arrangement. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night sometime. Same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.